up the radiator, in the middle of the radiator, near the top of the radiator, you start getting some improvement. But it's not night and day. It's a slow, continuous improvement, and you're really moving in the direction of making the radiator half wave. These are my opinions. I haven't done all of those experiments, so there could be some error in what I've said. But maybe you've done some of those experiments, Mel, and maybe you've talked to people who have done those experiments. K2KEY. K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. I remember there was a number of articles that were written years ago by, can't remember his name, guy used to write regular for QSP on his experiments with different kinds of antennas. He was in Canada. His call was, I think I remember speaking to him once, a VE3CV. Did you know him, Dick, over?
I might have talked to him, but I'm not sure. And if I did, it would be on VHF subjects. I've done rather little HF operation. Mel, go ahead.
The original design of a vertical antenna with the elevated feed was done by a gentleman originally in England, the UK. And then it was originally in their monthly magazine, you know, that's equivalent to QST. And then it was moved over. I have the article here. I have copies of them here. I could dig them up. And he went ahead and he duplicated this elevated feed vertical situation. And especially for 80, 40, I think he just basically concentrated on those two bands because the so-called elevated verticals that they were selling to those bands, now that of course they're offering them now for the entire 80 to 10 meter situation, but at that time they were claiming that again not a whole radio field was necessary, and that this elevated feed vertical will be a great performer, small footprint antenna, and put basically on a patio deck or whatever, sort of like a wonder antenna. And he went ahead and did the experiment, and there was never was conclusive that he showed that his, I could say, vertically polarized dipole for either one of those bands and all this vertically so-called elevated fed vertical did not really outperform it, Dick, over.
Interesting. By the way, I just sent a letter to Ken, WA5EJB, a email, and when I did that brief transmission on 147.375, he heard that through the internet. So the internet connection on 147.375 is there, but there is no connection to this machine tonight, so he's not able to sign in. And he and his other buddies in a couple of other states. So I think you're saying the Canadian didn't have a clear conclusion as to the rate of improvement as he elevated the feed. I can see how people would believe that elevating the feed is going to make fantastic improvement. But as I understand what really goes on that creates the signal radiated from the antenna into space, the real radiation is taking place because of resonance, because the signal is bouncing back and forth a large number of times, building up a certain amount of current. And if you've got a resonating antenna structure, that really means the antenna tuner, the feed line, plus the antenna. As that structure radiates, as the structure resonates, and you build up a current that becomes the magnetic field, that becomes the radiation, how you feed it is not as important as to where is the phase center, how far it is above Earth, where is the counterpoise, how efficient is that counterpoise. These are the real determining factors of antenna efficiency, gain on horizon, in my opinion. But that's an opinion. I haven't done all of these experiments. Now, if I understand you correctly, the Canadian who was doing some of these experiments saw some slow improvement, but not necessarily night and day. It didn't suddenly jump up to a signal on the horizon that was 10 dB stronger when he did one thing versus another thing as far as methods of feeding it. Would that be a somewhat safe statement to make, Mel, as to your reading of his experiments? K2KEY, K2LIW?
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, well, the antenna, again, I'm not using the name of this vertical, they are selling a vertical antenna, covers the entire 10 through 40 meter band and approximately 100 kilohertz on 80 meters. The antenna's total height is 25 feet, has no traps, has no tuning required. In fact, they even say it doesn't require even a tuner, additional tuner. And this is the story on it, and just elevated feet. So basically, the person that's involved with the company says that he challenges. Okay, I have had some experience with it, and I don't think that this is going to, antenna is going to outperform a antennas like you described, like a vertically polarized dipole, halfway vertically polarized dipole or whatever. I just hard to, you know, for me to maybe equal, if possible, it's equal on certain bands, fine business, but outshine it by, you know, a phenomenal amount, I can't see that thick over.
The antenna that's 25 feet high, Mel, what is the lowest band it is operational on? Go ahead.
Lowest frequency is 80 meters, 100 kilohertz on 80 meters, but the entire band, 40 through 10 meters. No problem covering 40, entire band of 40, 30, 20, 17, 15, 12, and 10, over.
Okay, a 25-foot high, vertically polarized, ground plane-like antenna on 80 meters. Let's see now. Half wave is 132 feet. Quarter wave is 67. Eighth wave would be 30-something. So it's around an eighth wave physically long. If the radiating device on 80 meters is an eighth of a wavelength long, that's nowhere near half wave electronically. I guess I could put fancy loading coils in the middle of that thing, isolate the daylights out of the bottom of it. That would be an elevated feed. I'd be 12 and a half feet, so to speak, above ground where I'm feeding it, resonating it in that manner. My phase center is 12 and a half feet above ground, as opposed to the normal technique where the phase center would be essentially on the ground. Even 25 feet of altitude on a radiating structure on 80 meters, an eighth wavelength of altitude, without a zillion ground plane radios, that's hard for that to give you a lot of performance on the horizon with almost everything I know about the radiating process. And maybe a fine antenna on 10 meters. I'm having trouble believing it's going to have fantastic performance on 80 meters. I wonder what you're feeling on that one, Mel, K2RIW.
Okay, let's say that it may be somewhat marginal because it does say only 100 kilohertz coverage on 80 meters. But I even question its performance with a 25-foot pipe on 40 meters. I question that. Yes, you could easily see that it would work most likely quite well, more than adequate for 10 meters. But for 40 meters, the entire band on 40 meters, and no radios required. That is underlined, Dick. Do you have the new issue? Let's see, what issue is it? March issue. I happen to have the March issue. I don't know where the April is. I don't know if it's in April also. Do you have the March issue of QST by any chance, over?
On your next transmission, if you transmit for more than 1 minute, I'll go to the living room and get the March issue. Go ahead.
Roger, we have the March issue and all without mentioning names. Tell you what page and all to look at it and see a picture of it and get your opinion on it. I happened to, I believe, I know the gentleman who I was talking to, because I believe I talked to him on 75 meters, and I know I don't like to step on somebody's toes, you know, and I'm not, that's why I don't want to use any names. You make up your own decision when you're buying something, and it's one man's, you know, treasures, another man's junk, or whatever, how it goes that way, one man's junk, another person's treasure, whatever, and I'm sure there's many, many people that are very happy with the antenna and think of it as the last word in antennas. So just by questioning that performance, because QST, of course, does not in any way evaluate antennas, I believe, anymore, Dick. Am I correct? Over.
I think they do not, and they will not allow you to publish a claim for performance or a claim for gain of an antenna. They've been fibbed to too many times. Is this antenna on page 155? Go ahead.
On the March issue that I'm reading right now, it is on page 132.
Okay, I'm going to 132. Be there in a minute. On page 132, is it the antenna in the upper left-hand corner?
Yes.
Now, that particular antenna in that picture looks like it is mounted above ground. Am I misinterpreting that? Or does it have what looks like radials sticking out from the side of it in the radiator? But is that, do you believe that antenna is mounted on a mast? It appears from the photographs to be mounted on a mast, and that mast looks to me like it's 15 feet above ground. Go ahead.
That's a typical arrangement. They tell you to put it on a patio deck, you know, on try to get it, you know, at least so it clears like that pattern, that so-called radial, if you notice, pick up, just clears like, say, the level of a roof and all. But I've seen them, you know, also according to the number of other, you know, advertisements that other pictures where they were sitting literally with this so that you just don't walk into, just clear it. In other words, this radial so-called counterpoise sticking out, you just want to get it up high enough so that you don't walk into it if you walk up on the deck, over.
Okay, so I see. Those four radials that look like they're 10 feet or so above the deck, what's your guess as to their length, Mel? If that total radiator is 25 feet tall, they look like they go out around 10 feet or so. What do you think?
See, they are exactly, each one is a fiberglass piece of lip-like material. They extend out, I think each one extends out from the mast about 48 inches. Yeah, I guess the spread from, if you want to go across there, there are four sections. They're made up of sections. And then there's what is on the end of them. There's a wire that's stretched around in a box shape around the edge of it, Dick, that you can't see in the picture, over.
Okay, the fact that that thing is mounted above Earth helps a whole lot. I'm going to give you that. Now, when he says elevated feed, does he mean the whole antenna is elevated, or the point where the radiator is fed is elevated? Maybe he means both. Now, the fact that that is above Earth, that's going to help a whole lot. I'm now giving you a higher percentage of efficiency capability of that antenna. I'm liking it more and more. I like that antenna a little more now that it's above ground, not in contact with ground. It looks to me like it is on that deck. The beginning of the antenna looks like it could easily be, in that photograph, it looks like it's slightly above the gutter height of the house. And the average house has gutters that are what? A healthy 10 feet off of Earth. Now I'm going to give you a little more performance out of that antenna, Mel. Go ahead.
Possibility, but would you say that this, because now the feed, all the half elevated feed, has no coils, no traps, none of that stuff. And, well, you read the advertisement, and that's the claim, that we'll outperform any dipole and of any kind of configuration on any of those bands of a any way you want to put the dipole, whether you want to put it a sloper, put it a vertical, horizontal, or whatever, this will outperform it. That's the claim, Dick. Over.
Now, in the ad itself on page 132, I guess it doesn't say that, but you're saying that when you go to the website or you go to the brochure, they claim that it'll outperform, I think you're saying, any dipole. I got to be a little bit careful now. I know it would be an apple-orange test if I set up a horizontal dipole at some significant altitude. That wouldn't be quite a fair test. If I set up a vertically polarized dipole on 80 meters on my particular tower, I think I would give a heavy challenge to that, because I've got the resources to do that. In fact, I could make a vertical dipole on a tower where the bottom of the dipole is a significant number of feet off the ground. And someday I've got to do that. So I could challenge it. But when you're saying that the ads, when you've got the brochure in your hand from the company, or when you go to the website, what do they claim? Any dipole at almost any altitude, this will outperform? Let's just talk about 80 meters now. What do you believe is the claim along those lines, though? Go ahead.
Oh, sure. It's a nice brochure that you do get with it. They send you. And in it, they show you a lot of graphs and things, very elaborately drawn, very picturesque, a lot of colors and all. And if you took, in other words, let's say, let's go by, like you just said, 80 meters. If we maybe strung an 80-meter antenna from your tower at that altitude, I would say that you most likely is going to definitely, I would say you're definitely going to, with your dipole coming off that tower, was going to be outperform this thing. I'm sure of it. But I don't get, like you say, don't bet your last dollar on it. And but in other words, anything equivalent to, I guess, altitude, setting it up. If we were ahead, went ahead and had it say support, not for 80 meters. Let's say 20 meters, and we had a support high enough to hang a tree limb or whatever, a vertical dipole, and we put this in comparison, that would you believe, according to, you know, equivalency of installations, that this will outperform any of those type of dipoles, Dick, in the sloper or vertically polarized or horizontally polarized at equal height, over.
I've gone to the website, I'm reading the ad right now, I'm looking at the photograph. And yes, technically he's correct. There are no loading coils in the conventional manner in which you and I would set up a loading coil. I do see a number of parallel resonators along the radiator. That's okay with me. I see that counterpoise system at the bottom with the wires between the four things. The whole thing is, it says height 25 feet. And I guess if I mounted it in the recommended manner that's shown in the photograph on page 132, looks to me like the bottom of the antenna is gutter height of that house. That's going to give you a lot of extra performance. I'm getting more impressed with this antenna. Maybe if they're claiming that it'll outperform any dipole on 80 meters, that's a strong one. There's a lot of variables involved there. It's kind of a difficult comparison. This thing is only 25 feet tall. The fact that the whole thing is elevated gives me a little more enthusiasm. From your point of view, and I didn't see that yet in the ad, is this a fairly expensive antenna? Some of the members of your organization have one. Have they used it? Are they fairly happy with it? The fact that it only covers 100 kilohertz at 80 meters, that doesn't bother me. A structure that is only an eighth of a wavelength long, physically, by all the laws of physics, has got to be high in Q. Got to be somewhat narrow band. And I guess, in theory, you could tune it to your favorite portion of the band. I presume there are techniques by which I could, if I wanted to, make it operate at the low end of 80 meters or the high end of 80 meters. You'll correct me on that one. So, from your point of view, is this an expensive structure? And have any of your members of your organization used it then, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
I put one together a couple of years ago for one of the guys. And installed it basically on a deck similar to what you see there, maybe not, well, it's up high enough, like I say, that I had a piece of pipe, about a 15-foot piece of pipe that we stuck up on a deck that was, say, how high up would the deck be? Maybe about 4 feet, 3-4 feet up above ground, wood deck, and mounted it. Convenient spot that he had because of a limited space. That's why he picked this antenna. It's a small footprint, as they say. And we put it up. I had a piece of pipe. I think it was about a 12-foot piece of pipe or whatever I happened to have around, a piece of iron pipe. And we clamped it to that, and clamped it to one of the posts that hold up the fencing on along the edge of the deck. And put some non-metallic guides. And seems to be very satisfied with it. I don't, of course, not gonna, as they say, rain on his parade. So I'm saying, well, I'm happy it's working out for you. I just question, some of the claims over.
I've expanded the photographs where you see the midsection and the lower section, and I see four and six black tubular objects that are parallel to the main radiating mast. What are those objects, Mel?
Hey, first of all, if you'll notice that on the bottom, these little black donut-shaped things, that's to insulate the mast from the supporting structure. As you go up to hold the those rods, those are pieces of PVC pipe that, supports the position of rods, those tuning rods along the main element, over.
Okay, quite crafty. So I see that it's insulated from the support structure with chunks of rubber and hose clamps that are used in pairs so that they don't contact each other. Quite crafty. That whole structure floats. I'm liking this antenna a little more, Mel. More than I expected to. I think there's some smarts in this thing. I'm going to have to retract some of my statements, Mel. I'm beginning to like this thing. It's physically above ground. It's got its own counterpoise. Since the counterpoise is far away from Earth by 10 or so feet, that's going to help a lot. I think you're saying your buddy is fairly pleased with the performance. Out of curiosity, could I choose the portion of 80 meters that 100 kc resonates, or am I fixed? This is one of my questions. From your point of view, is this an expensive antenna, or do you think this is reasonably priced? Over to you, Mel.
I see. This is K2KEY. It was quite pricey for the time. In fact, I sort of looked at him in disbelief when he told me how much this antenna cost. So like I said, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but when they make certain statements, I question certain statements. When you get a chance, if you want to look a little bit more into the theory of operation, if you look in QST back, I believe it was a VE3, I think it's called VE3CV. I think I've talked to him a few times, that's why it rings a bell. He did a series of articles for QST on different types of so-called antennas at that time that were theoretical. They did not invent this antenna. This elevated feed came from a guy, development in the UK, as I said. Take a look at elevated feed vertical stick and see what you think of what they say about the theory and what's actually taking place, and see what you get come to your decision over.
Okay. When you say the antenna was pricey, was it getting close to the price of what rigs you and I used to buy back in the beginning, Mel?
Easily. Yep, it's up in the number of bucks. It is one of the more expensive type of antennas of its type on the market. It's right up there. And, like I say, it's based on this elevated feed. I could sit in the file, find the exact, you know, information of when this was viewed or when it was printed, the theory of operation and all in QSP about elevated feed vertical. And they just were able at that, I think there, the original article, of course, was for a single band operation. This is, as you can see, for multiband, how they managed to come up with a multiband version with these extra rods that they call tuning rods that hang off the side of the antenna. So, like I say, I'd like you to take a look at the theory of operation and on the elevated feed. See what you think, Mr. Dick, over.
From your point of view, Mel, is this a popular antenna? Do you know a number of people using it? And can I choose the portion of the 80-meter band where that 100 KC is effective? Could I choose the low end or the high end of the band if I wanted to by setting the rods appropriately, do you believe? Go ahead.
Remember correctly, when you order the antenna, you specify whether you want to use it, that portion of the band, either the CW portion or the phone portion. If I may be wrong, but I believe that they send you the correct rod for that situation, over.
Okay, if I look at this blow-up picture of the individual components, and I see the midsection and lower section, and I see these four tubular objects that are laying parallel, I'm beginning to think that they pivot out perpendicular to the main mast when they pick up the four radials that are then going to have the wire strung between them. That's what I think I'm looking at here. Although I'm a little bit not quite understanding why the midsection and the lower section would both have those four black tubular objects. Interesting antenna. Okay. I see counterpoise rods. I see a total of eight of them. I guess they telescope together. I see top tuner rod, 51 inches, lower tuning rods, quite a bit of stuff there. Interesting antenna. Okay, that's not your normal quarter-wave ground plane radio that you mount right on the ground in the backyard, Mel. There's a little more smarts to this thing. I'm beginning to like it a little bit more. So, I'm going to retract some of my statements. I think this thing is capable of quite a bit more efficiency than an ordinary ground plane that lays flat on the ground with an improper number of ground plane radials. And you've got at least one friend that's using it and likes it. And if you did fall in love with this particular antenna design, and if you had the choice of either homebrewing all of that hardware or just writing a check and making the problem go away, to a guy who is not hurting for money, which would you recommend, Mel? KQRIW.
The problem, this K2KEY, if you look at the article, like I say, on elevated, you know, it's funny, I looked in the antenna manual, on the elevated feed, I don't see anything really, is elevated feed, basically was just an experiment, a theoretical experiment that they took, because, you know, they cover in these antenna books fairly, quite a bit about, you know, almost every kind of, like you say, antenna design, which there are, sure, a heck of a lot of them. But you never see anything really that gets into too much into elevated feed, other than that article that was written by this fellow from Canada. I believe he was some kind of antenna engineer or whatever, and he would do quite a number of these experiments. If you were going out and trying to duplicate such a thing, if you, I could say in his article in QSP some years ago, he does describe how he put together a homebrew version. Today, it's costly. No doubt, buying material today, aluminum tubing and whatnot, and all kinds of pieces, I would assume you would never maybe come anywhere near the price of this thing, but if you have to have the facilities to do drilling and all things, I guess the average ham wants something you can more or less take out of the box and put together within an hour and get it up and running, Dick, over.
Would I be correct in assuming that the website is not going to tell me the price of the thing, Mel?
No, really. I would assume that they must be have pipe list somewhere on the website. I would assume if you want to order the antenna, that there has to be a price list there somewhere for it, Dick. As you can see, they got six different models of it. No, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four models that they're selling, Dick, over.
Okay, I made the mistake of assuming those four different models, those four different names or four different kinds of antennas. So if I'm looking at, on the website, the fourth one down, which happens to be the same model number that's discussed in page 132, so I guess you're saying the other three names, what's different about them? They just don't cover quite as many bands? Go ahead.
This is the one that covers the most bands. They have ones for, I think, for 10 through 20 meters. They have one through 6 meters, 6 through 15 or whatever. I know they have a number of different versions of. I know one of them, two of them cover 6 meters also. But I don't remember offhand anymore. I know I have all the information somewhere in a file here. And because I did make a copy, I was very interested in when we were putting it together, something very unique that I ran into I've never seen before. And I was looking at this and I said, gee, I made a copy. I borrowed the instruction manual, the assembly, the assembly with the parts list and all that. And there was something very unusual that I came across there, and that was what sort of struck my fancy at the time, Dick, over.
Yeah, there is a section here where you fill out their order form for a quote, and I guess if you give them all your information, call sign, name, address, phone number, email address, and whatever, you'll get a response, what is the price for what you selected. The website itself does not tell you the price, so it's hard for me to tell how expensive it is, and I'm not about to buy one right now. But I see some interesting features that are kind of nice, that for a certain kind of amateur, this might be a somewhat desirable antenna, Mel. Whether or not we continue to discuss this or go with the 15 minutes left to the next mailbag, it's your choice. K2KEY, K2RIW.
K2JJ with info.
Go ahead, Doug.
Hi, Dick. Good evening. Just wanted to give you the price on that antenna. It's listed in the current AES catalog for $400.
That's the Titan, TITANDX. That's the model number. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the one, and just as a comparison, Cushcraft makes a similar antenna, the R8, which is selling for $540, so take your pick.
Who do we owe, Dick? Rich recognized. Doug, is the Cushcraft model that you just mentioned, is it also a antenna that is, by the way, they may call this an elevated feed. I call it an elevated antenna. The hold-on antenna is elevated 10 feet above the deck, so to speak. Is the Cushcraft equivalent also intended to be elevated antenna, somewhat similar to this? Over to you, Doug, first.
I don't know, Dick. I've never used them. I'm just giving you prices out of the catalog, but I believe Rich uses one, so he could better tell you about the R8.
Okay, Rich. Is your R8 mounted on a mast where it's insulated from the mast and the hold-on antenna is elevated in the air? Over to you, Rich.
Dick. Well, first of all, I've had an R8 now for about 5 years. I'm quite happy with it. It's an electrical half wave, about 30 feet tall, covers 6 meters to 40 meters, never used it on 6, mainly on 20 and 40. It gives a good accounting of itself. It's mounted on a 12-foot pipe. On the ground, it has 7 48-inch radials. It's got a combination of traps and stubs. In other words, equivalent to like a half a fan dipole, if you get my drift. and it works quite well. I'm surprised how well it does work, because it's an electrical halfway that can use the 48-inch counterpoise radios. It doesn't depend upon a quarter-wave ground plane system.
Interesting. Is the antenna itself insulated from its mounting mast, Rich, or is it metal to metal right on the mounting mast? And maybe there's another insulator at the base of the antenna, but is the radiator, are major portions of the antenna on your R8 insulated from its mounting mast? Go ahead.
I don't remember. I believe it is, Dick. Yes, they've got a box with a matching unit in the base of the antenna to match the impedance of the radiator to 50 ohm coax. Let me put it this way. I'm so pleased with it. I was worried they'd discontinue it. I've got a brand new one in a box as a spare sitting in my attic, if that answers your question.
Sure it does. That's one testimonial. Interesting. You obviously like it a lot, and I'm pleased with it. And because it is, the whole structure is elevated above the ground, I think that helps an awful lot. Because the lossiest stuff around is earth, and this antenna is essentially removed a significant distance away from earth. After that, as long as you use the right materials, it's hard to make an antenna with low efficiency. The antenna itself, you pour 100 watts into it, I'll bet you it's going to run ice cold. So it's radiating the signal. If you can make the radiating structure removed from Earth, then you pick up a whole lot of improvement in efficiency. And vertical radiators do tend to have a nice low side lobe on the horizon. I'm beginning to like these antennas a little bit more, Mel. And some of the things I've said may be a little too severe. H-U-K-E-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
Rich mentioned that he has a matching box of some sort down on the bottom of the antenna, and he also has some kind of a system of, I guess, of traps or stubs or whatever. This does not, according to this. There are no traps, no tuning, just these rods. And the method that they use for matching, this is what I would like you to look into. That's why I mentioned it to you. This elevated feed, and I looked at something very unusual, which I have never seen before in an antenna, a vertical antenna, is the method how the matching system takes place in this thing. Very, very unique, Dick, over.
Okay, now, whether you've got a loading coil, which is a helical set of turns of wire, or whether it's distributed as a resonator or as a inductor by way of those rods, that's your choice. And to say that it has no loading coils, is that a plus or a minus? I'm not against loading coils. Interesting. I'll have to dig into this a little bit more. You decide if we dwell on this one or go to the next one on the 13 minutes we got left now. K2LIW.
What I was alluding to, being that we've only got a few minutes left, it comes shipped with the matching system, which is a piece of coax cable. The coax cable goes right down the center of the pipe. And according to them, it is zigzag in the top section. It comes that way. In other words, you open the box, that coax is in there already. And it zigzags in there. And at the top of the mast, all the way up at the top, at the 25-foot level, they've got a capacitor that is mounted to one side of it to the pipe. And the other side is cable connects onto it, onto a terminal, and then a cap goes on there, and this is the way it comes. I looked at that. That's exactly the way it comes shipped after you do not do any assembly in it. That coax cable is inside the pipe already, and it's supposedly is zigzagged in there, and that's their method of matching, Dick, with a capacitor that where the electrical connection of that coax is right at the top of the pipe. If you lift the cap off, there's a water cap on top of it that you can pull off, and you see the capacitor in there with the coax coming up there. and the coax drops right straight down this thing, comes out the bottom of the pipe stick. It's all inside the pipe, over.
Yeah, I'm looking at an expanded mechanical view right now, a PDF, and it has a top yellow lead, dust cover, top section, but I think you're saying it's fed way up there, and by some means, I think you said the cable is zigzagged down that pipe. Is there something holding it into a particular zigzag position? And quite possibly the shield is connected, of the coax, is connected some distance down the pipe, and the center conductor is what's going up to the top. Is that possibly what's happening, Mel? Go ahead.
Just for able to peek in the end, I really couldn't see where what's going on in there. If I could say it comes that way, you do not assemble that. That's the way it comes from their factory. And basically, that's what you see exactly is that supposedly this cable, according to the theory, that's why I'm mentioning that this elevated feed was designed by a ham in the UK, and it was duplicated and printed in a QST article some years ago, and he shows how he went about zigzagging this piece of coax in the pipe. So that's what I thought was very unique, that the coax just drops out the bottom and you connect your feed line to that point. That's it, Dick. When we did install it, I put the bridge on it, brought my antenna analyzer, and I was amazed. I went across to the bands, and it works. It's loaded on all the bands, as they said, Dick, just as the advertisement is correct on. And so that's why I'd say, I guess I'd have to have one here at the location and some real comparison to see if this really works that well. But like I say, my friend is happy with it, so not going to rain on his parade, over.
Yeah, I do see the center insulator where those four rods going down and one rod going up are picked up. I am guessing the coax shield connects to the bottom half of that insulator. The center conductor goes up that tube and connects to the top section of metal. Rich, over to you, N2EO, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Yeah, well, the Kush graph is a different animal. It's fed at the base. And instead of feeding the center conductor direct, center conductor to the vertical element and the radials to the shield, they go through this matching box, which has a toroid, some capacitors, some other parts in it, and they've got two terminals. One goes to the 48-inch counterpoise radials, the other goes to the base of the half-wave, electrical half-wave radiator. Now, it doesn't cover, the R8 Cushcraft does not cover 80 meters, but I think it's a very honest antenna. If anything, they're underplaying it. They don't advertise it a lot. They don't push it a lot. It's really a very good antenna. I've had it now, I think, more than 5 years, because I bought it about a year after my mother passed away, and that was 10 years ago, come to think of it. And it's really given me a very good accounting of itself.
Sure does sound like you're reasonably happy with it, Rich. I think this is a half-wave radiator, Mel, while I stare at this thing. When you include the capacitive loading, you get to the mounting structure at the bottom and the insulation, and there's going to be a little bit of heat on the outer. There's going to be some RF on the outer shield of the coax cable, but if that ground plane radial system is doing enough of a job, that won't be huge. I think electronically this is a half-wave radiator with its method of building a loading coil, which is done with rods instead of a coil. And I guess you're saying the Canadian antenna designer really designed the thing some time ago, called an elevated feed. And if you and I look it up in the QST archives, as a member of ARL, we can look at all those past articles. We can read more about it. And you're going to tell me once again the Canadians are call letters, Mel. And we're getting down to about 4 or 5 minutes before we're going to be cut off. K2KEY, K2LAW.
Not near the computer right now. I think his call letters were VE3CV, Charlie Victor, if I'm not mistaken. If you're in front of the computer right now, if you punch in that call letter, see what comes up. And if you look in the QST archive, it was, I believe the article was Elevated Seat. I could say I'm sure I've got it in the file, because when I saw this thing, I, you know, more or less got a little bit fascinated by this method. When it said Elevated Seat, what do they really mean by this? I thought maybe that they, you know, just had something hanging on the antenna, but nope. This, and the coax goes straight right up to the top stick, right up to the very top of the antenna. So I was real curious, and this Canadian, he describes the whole thing, what, how he put it together and how he made it work and what his comments are. So if you're there, just take a quick look. I believe it is a VE3CV. Maybe if you could just get his name, maybe it'll ring a bell with me. Over.
Okay, I've looked for Victor Echo 3, Charlie Victor. The name that comes up is Kenneth Willing, W-I-L-L-I-N-G, Ottawa, Ontario. Is that the guy?
I think so. Gee, you know, again, I'd have to find it. But all right, I think he may be the one. But I guess if you go to the archives and just look on the Elevated Seat antenna, most likely it will come up in the ARRL archive. I believe the it may have been, oh, maybe 15 or maybe 20 years ago, Dick, over.
Okay, I'm going to the archives right now, and I'm going to search the words Elevated Feed. Let's see, I guess you're pretty sure it was a QST archives, so I'll go to QST archives first.
I'm sure it was QST that reviewed it. I remember that time. 99% sure. I can say I have to go to the files, but I haven't got time anymore today. If you can't find it next week, I surely will give some more information, because it is something, you know, here that maybe that we're overlooking, and so I guess maybe we have to keep an open mind. Over.
Yeah, I'm searching those call letters right now and see if QST has something on him. Let's see, where do I hit the search word? I gave it call letters. Search the index. Here we go. No records found, so we might not have the right call letters. Victor Echo 3, Charlie Victor, may not be the right guy, Mel. No records found that match that call letters.
I may have it wrong. It could be a long time ago, you know. I think maybe it's VE3EV, you know. Maybe VE3EC. I'm not sure. I know it was two letters after the VE3, but I can't remember offhand anymore. But is there anything on Elevated Feed as that as the keywords? Over.
I'm going to search that one right now.
I guess I'm going to run out of time, so if not, well, I'll give you more information next week, Dick. Take care, because I'm going to close down the repeater in a minute or two. If I can't find it, we'll pick up on this next week. This is K2KEY.
Full-length radiator, Elevated Feed. There is an article. It's coming up right now.
Hey, I think that's it. So, funny, like I say, I have never found any information in any of the antenna handbooks of the ARRL or anybody's handbook on this type of situation. Over.
And you were right. It's Victor Echo 3, Charlie Victor. That used to be his call letters, John Belrose. It's now assigned to somebody else. Go ahead. Aylmer, Canada. So, John Belrose. Does that ring a bell?
Actually, John Belrose. That's him. I remember talking to him, and he told me all about it, and that's how I got involved with all this some years ago. Okay, there's the description of what he's doing, and we can leave it for next week, Dick. Over.
Okay, good stuff. You guys have just listened to TechNet number 1,000. 237 of the series. Mel and I will be back next week. 73-year-old. Let's hope that the internet's restored next week. Be kind to each other. Bye-bye for now. K2RAW clear.
Good night, all. This is K2KEY.
Time is 12 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30. The time is 1:23 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. 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 Morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30.
UA2KOP. BUA2KOP.
W2H receiving. Morning, good morning. Hello, hello, what a great weekend. But and again, every weekend is great. Just about on time this morning. Colder than I thought. Much colder than I'd like, actually. Oh, back to you.
And I got up, took the head out the door and said, ooh, what happened here? And I'm running just a tad behind the 8-ball. Tad behind the 8-ball on the westbound trek into Lower Manhattan this morning. Go bounce around, I gotta go to that wonderful building with all the men with the big guns. I gotta get all my top secret IDs. Just love going to work on a piece of equipment near a room full of gold. It's just a wonderful thing.
Well, not too long ago, I used to walk into a bank to deposit something and it'd be somebody at the door with a gun. That went away, but what came instead was when you go to a certain McDonald's and Queens here on the parkway, it was a man with a gun. So I guess he went from the bank to the McDonald's. Maybe people got civilized at the banks. Anyway, yeah, we've got all that stuff down in Metrotech. I'm sure you know about it. You know, in fact, my nephew had that duty for a while. But, the automatic strapped to the side. I guess it's a sign of the times. WA2KOP.
Net W2HCB. Yeah, well, good old Pine Street, Federal Reserve. You know? Interesting, interesting stuff. Excuse me, sir, you have to stop what you're doing. We're bringing a container of top secret stuff past you. Anyway, yes, good weekend. Pretty good weekend. Got a nice big dinner Saturday night, and had a good time. Good time. Had a good Saturday, good Saturday night, fantastic day yesterday, and now back into the rolling heavy onion into Manhattan on a Monday morning.
Now you call heavy iron.
had the kids over last night, one of my daughter's birthdays. And I'm kind of feeling it this morning. I went from totally being light, as I should call it, on Friday when I had a colonoscopy. Well, overloaded last night, so I think we'll pass on breakfast and lunch today. A little moderations. But what do you call heavy iron?
In the back of the truck, we got about a 500-pound diesel cylinder head for a 6-cylinder Cummins. I'll be meeting two of my other bigger trucks in Manhattan to assist on putting a machine together for a customer. Not to mention the other hundreds of pieces of equipment that are headed in today. I mean, scattered like cockroaches all over the city.
Just the question is, how do you get a 500-pound head off the truck? I guess the answer is very gingerly. What is it, a generator?
Non-negative. It is a 136-foot aerial boom, like a snorkel lift. But only this one is called a genie.
Wow, that's a lot of horsepower. We were talking about the 3116s last week. I think my whole engine, well, without the transmission, is about 1,800 pounds. Oh. That's a big engine there.
Yeah, I make them indestructible. You know, you turn it to a big squash pump, as they call it, for the drive system. Off the back, there's four hydraulic pumps. Not to mention the generator that's bolted onto the side of the engine. So, you know, stuff happens. That's all I got to say is, stuff happens. That's a job. Somebody's got to do it, right? Getting the head off the truck ain't the problem. The problem is lifting it up 7 feet in the air and getting it on the engine. That's where it becomes a little hairy. That takes two people. You ain't got something to lift it with. It takes two people on two ladders. It's just a load of fun. Just a load of fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever worked on boats. Not that I've done, you know, not that I've swung engines, but some of these boats, they seem to build the engine. They seem to build a boat around the engine, especially, you know, sports fisherman type. You know, then when they have to, if they do a total engine repower, you gotta get that thing back out of there. We have one of the fellas has a 36-foot runaway. They stopped making them battle wagons, these boats, but he's got two Volvos in there, Volvo diesels. Yeah, you can walk into the engine compartment. You can just about walk around the engines. It's pretty nice sized machinery room. But if you got to take the blocks out, which would really be catastrophic, and have to rip up the decks, have to chop everything up, you know, other than just, you know, replacing things, you know, in place, heads, sleeves, and all that. But, that's tight. That's they do things, and you say, man. I think this thing has to be serviced one day, you know?
Yeah. No, I've done quite a number of
engine swaps on both people. And way back when, I did a lot of clam boats with DM boards, little four-cylinder diesels. They were always a lot of fun. I had a couple of weekend warriors guys